A burglar alarm, I guess, although I've never seen one quite that sophisticated in a home. That's because it's a special custom job put in by the builder of this development. It's a big selling feature out here, since Toon neighborhoods routinely report the city's highest burglary rates. Can you imagine? They steal from one another. Almost makes me ashamed to be a Toon. If he was waiting for me to say, "I know how you feel," he was in for a few days of silence. I've never been ashamed to be a human. When he saw I wasn't going to respond, he resumed his explanation of Roger's security system. "The alarm cycles on automatically when the front door closes. It wasn't on when you got here because the music scale had drifted in, gotten wrapped around the doorknob, and was holding the door ajar. Disengaging the alarm requires a multi-sequential process. It took some of my best experts to figure out." "Which means that nobody got into this house unless Roger wanted them to."
"Correct. Hence, the likelihood that Roger knew his killer well enough to invite him inside."
"So, you figure the wife?"
"That would be my first guess. It would also explain how the killer got out without sounding the alarm. Since Jessica had lived here with the rabbit, she must know the code. She could easily have turned the system off and walked away."
"Very logical," I said politely. "Congratulations on your sound reasoning. You've overlooked only one teeny problem. According to Roger, he'd asked Jessica to meet with him many times before, and she had consistently refused. Why should she suddenly accept his offer now? When I talked to her yesterday, she made it quite clear she had no intention of pursuing a reconciliation. I suggested a get-together between her and Roger, and she gave me a firm no." Cleaver seemed quite relieved when another sergeant came up and saved him from having to tiptoe out of the corner he'd painted himself into. The sergeant showed Cleaver two items, both encased in plastic bags. One was the .38 pistol from Roger's nightstand. The other was a hunk of metal, the fatal bullet, judging from the size of it.
"One shot missing from the .38,
the sergeant said to Cleaver. But Cleaver took more of an interest in the slug.
"Hey, Butch, ever see one like this?"
He held the bullet where I could inspect it. It looked like it had started life as a perfect sphere, before running into Roger Rabbit and a wall. "Seems to be an old-fashioned musket ball from a black powder long rifle, or a flintlock pistol," I said.
"That's my guess, too. You run into any antique gun collectors in this case?"
"Can't say I have." Cleaver returned the sack to his sergeant.
"Process them both through ballistics," he instructed.
Cleaver picked up Roger's cigar box, opened it, and saw the carrots inside. His granite jaw cracked upward slightly at either end of his mouth. Poor guy. But that's what happens when you hang around with Toons all day. You start to develop a sense of humor. Next thing you know, nobody takes you seriously anymore, and you wind up laughing yourself straight into the morgue.
"The deceased have any enemies you know of?"
asked Cleaver. I shrugged. Who could hate a rabbit? Just then another police car squealed up outside. The rear door opened, and out came Captain Rusty Hudson. He worked the human side and had a well-earned reputation as the most feared kind of law and order fanatic, one with a self-starter but no break. He wrapped up his assignments so quickly and so neatly that he routinely had the lowest active caseload of any human detective. I wondered why the department had sent its superstar to investigate a case involving a dead rabbit. Hudson came inside, took a look around, and saw me. "Finally found your level down here with the rest of the crazies. How valiant."
"Nice to see you again, too, Captain," I replied.
"What can I do for you, sir?" asked Cleaver.
Even though they held the same rank, the department's age-old unwritten law required a Toon officer to defer to a human. And everybody who knew Hudson knew he would make life extremely miserable for any Toon colleague deviating from tradition. "When I heard the report about this Roger Rabbit character being killed," said Hudson, "I figured I'd better shag it right over here before your bunch gets too far into their search. No offense, but I've had lots of problems with the Toon side losing evidence on me before.
What kind of evidence you after?
A 38 caliber revolver? Maybe has one shot gone? You find anything like that when you tossed this place? Cleaver nodded.
Sure did. Upstairs in the nightstand. One bullet fired. I sent it to ballistics. Why? You got something on it?
I have reason to suspect it was the murder weapon in a human homicide last night.
A human homicide? Who?
I asked.
Hudson looked at me the way people look at escargot when they find out that means snails.
You got a reason to be here, Gumshoe? You a witness? A suspect? Or what?
He was employed by the rabbit, explained Cleaver. I was just taking his statements when you arrived.
Hudson nodded to show he understood that police work often forced officers to associate against their wills with guys like me. He expanded his narrative, but for Cleaver's benefit, not mine.
About one this morning, we got a call from a hysterical woman who turned out to be this rabbit's wife. Seems she lives with a guy named Rocco DeGrisi, a big wheel in the comic industry. She was out late. When she came home, she saw a light on in DeGrisi's study. She went in to check and found DeGrisi slumped across his desk. Dead.
You got an estimated time of death? I asked. But Hudson ignored me.
I did some quick checking around, he continued, and found out that this rabbit had previously threatened DeGrisi's life, in front of witnesses during a photo session at his photographer's studio. I also discovered that this rabbit bears a grudge, because DeGrisi failed to honor a promise to give him his own strip. As if I needed more, DeGrisi has also grabbed the rabbit's girl. Put that all together, it spells murder. I'll give odds that the bullet we found in DeGrisi turns out to have come from the rabbit's gun.
Were you able to pinpoint an exact time of death?
Asked Cleaver, repeating my earlier question.
Since this time it had come through channels, Hudson answered, we figure it out midnight.
Judging from the hardness of the rabbit's final balloon, he got it about an hour later. You checked Jessica Rabbit's alibi for then? Cleaver asked.
No, why should I? What's she got to do with anything? The rabbit plugged DeGrisi. There's no doubt in my mind.
Great. That takes care of your murder. What about mine?
Cleaver's word balloon came out so frosty, you almost needed a squeegee to read it.
These two deaths are too closely related to be a coincidence. Suppose Jessica Rabbit saw Roger kill Rocco, followed the rabbit back here, and executed him for his crime. A perfect motive. The rabbit shot her lover, so Jessica shot the rabbit.
I'll let you solve that part of it, said Hudson, buffing his fingernails on his lapel with such intense concentration that a casual onlooker might suspect it was the most important thing he had to do for the entire rest of the day. When the report comes back from ballistics, I'll stamp my case closed. What do I care about who blew away some bunny? With that, he left the house, got into his car and roared off, siren on and lights flashing, a showboat to the end. Cleaver took a peek through a telescope set up in the front window, but it was way too early to see any stars.
Did that rabbit have what it takes to kill a man? Cleaver asked me.
I don't know. On the one hand, he really hated Rocco DeGrisi, but on the other hand, who can picture a killer rabbit?
Yeah, I know what you mean, said Cleaver.
He drifted off into the mental never-never land where toons seem to spend three-quarters of their time. You finished with me, Captain?
What?
A series of tiny balloons, each containing an itsy-bitsy question mark, bubbled out of his head. The balloons popped, letting the question marks parachute to the floor. I was tempted to scoop them up and pocket them, since I knew a book publisher who bought them to cut typesetting costs in his line of whodunits.
Sure, Cleaver said. You can go. Just don't leave town without checking with me first. And one other thing. I don't know how you felt about this rabbit, or if you took his case seriously, but from here on out this affair belongs to me. Official police investigation. You want to keep your license? You stay out. Understand?
100%, I said. I won't interfere. I jammed my hand into my pocket and crossed my fingers. I promise. 14. The elevator in my office building worked so seldom that the toon doorman, a strapping gorilla, made a nice chunk of change carrying people to the upper floors on his back. Today I lucked out. The elevator appeared and whisked me to the 12th floor in less than a week, which probably set a building speed record. My $300 a month bought me a waiting room where a secretary would sit, if I could ever afford to hire one, my office proper and a small john. The place normally rented for $250, but I got charged an extra half yard because of the view. Open the window, look up, and you see the sky. Look down, and you see the street. Look straight out, and you see the brickwork of the building next door. Great place. Shabby and overpriced, but it suited me better than one of those chrome and glass stakes that builders keep pounding into the heart of what used to be a picturesque city. I noticed something wacky as soon as I took out my keys to open the outer door. The lock was badly scratched. Sure sign of an amateur thief. The pros go in and out without leaving a trace, but amateurs always botch it. I slammed open the door and entered the waiting room the way I learned in the Corps, low and fast. I kicked the door shut on my way past, but there was nobody hiding behind it. It didn't take me long to search the waiting room, since it contained only two folding chairs and a card table with some hardly thumbed magazines on it. Anybody small enough to hide behind any of that stuff didn't really worry me. I checked the door connecting this room with my office proper. It, too, bore signs of having been picked. I had a wall safe in my office, and in that I kept my gun. Just my luck to walk in on a burglar and get shot with my own piece. I took a few deep breaths, opened the door, and went in Marine style again. Except this time I added a forward somersault, which might not have been the greatest idea in the world. You have to practice those things a lot, or they leave you dizzy. Which is just how I wound up when I came out of it. I grabbed the edge of my desk for support and tried to look alert. Nobody shot me, so I figured the burglar had already skedaddled. I was wrong. When the room straightened out, I found him, sitting behind my desk, brazen as you please. One thing for sure, I'd have no trouble picking this clown out of a lineup. He wore a long purple coat, a fireman's hat, and a t-shirt that said, "Kiss me, I'm fuzzy." If I hadn't known better, I'd have sworn it was...
"I'm sorry I had to break in on you like this, Mr. Valiant. I mean, picking your lock and all, but I really didn't know where else to go or who else to turn to."
"Roger? Roger Rabbit?" I went around to his side of the desk, opened the bottom drawer, took out the office bottle and swigged down a healthy glug. I stared at the rabbit until he got the message and shagged his tail out of my chair. I brushed a few stray pieces of hair off the seat and sat down.
"Start explaining," I said, "and it better be good."
He went to the window and took in the $50 view.
"I know what you think," he said. "You think I'm really Roger, but I'm not. I'm his doppelganger, his mentally created duplicate."
"Yeah, I know about that stuff," I said, remembering Jessica Rabbit falling to pieces around me.
"Well, Roger conjured me up last night about 11. The rabbit went on. "He had a photo session this morning, and he needed a pair of red suspenders to wear at it. He gave me a $50 bill and told me to go out and buy him some."
"He sent you out in the middle of the night to find him a pair of red suspenders?"
"Yes. I can be very impulsive at times. Anyway, I left and started hitting those variety stores you see around, the ones that stay open late at night. I must have gone to 20 of them and couldn't find a pair of red suspenders anywhere. I found green, blue, yellow, polka dot, orange, striped."
I did a few wheelies with my index finger. He caught my drift and kept his story rolling.
"When I finally found a store with the right color suspenders, they couldn't change my bill. I hung around downtown until my bank opened, broke the bill, went back, and bought the suspenders."
He pointed to a wrapped package lying on top of my desk.
"I returned home about 10 this morning and found the place crawling with cops. I overheard two of them describing what had happened. that I, or rather the real me, had been killed. I didn't know what to do. I'm not very decisive when it comes to emergencies. I suppose I should have identified myself to the police, but I was afraid to. I feared that whoever got to the real Roger might come after me, too. Then I thought of you.
Thanks.
Don't mention it. Since I'm supposed to be dead, I didn't want to wait for you out in the hall where somebody might recognize me, so I picked your lock. I didn't think you would mind. You don't, do you? It's actually my first try at it. As I told you before, I've always had a hankering to be a detective. I believe every detective should know how to pick locks. I'm sure you do, don't you? So, I bought some lock-picking tools I saw advertised on the inside cover of a matchbook.
He showed me a set of picks, only slightly smaller and less clumsy than the iron bar I used to pry the hubcaps off my car.
They came with a self-instruction manual. Pretty neat, huh?
Tell me, I said, after giving the office bottle another howdy-doody, how long before you start to, you know, fall apart? The bunny stared with deep foreboding at the far wall, as though the hand of God had just inscribed there the recipe for Hassenpfeffer.
Hard to tell. Roger put a large jolt of mental energy into creating me. I could easily last 48 hours before I... until I...
A dark, watery boo-boo balloon plopped to the floor. But I give him this much. It didn't spill any tears.
"You have any idea who murdered me?"
he asked. "Yeah, I got an idea." "You get a call from anyone last night?" I asked. "Or anybody come to see you?" He shrugged. A ridiculous move for a guy with next to no shoulders.
"I don't know. The mental strain of creating a doppel tends to disrupt short-term memory. I remember up to early yesterday evening, but not much after."
"You don't remember getting a call from your wife? Saying that she wanted to come over for a talk?"
"Jessica? Jessica came by to see me? Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy!"
Talk about happiness. If Roger had been Flash Gordon, he would have been outside his rocket ship swinging on a star.
"I knew you could pull it off, Mr. Valiant. I knew I picked the right man. I knew you could get me Jessica back. How did you do it? Put the arm on Rocco. That it? I'll bet that's it. You found out what he had on her and forced him to stop."
With a swift left jab, I punched a jumbo hole in the biggest of his balloons.
"Not so fast.
I don't know for sure whether or not Jessica came to see you last night. If she did, it wasn't for a reconciliation."
"Why, then?"
"The police think she killed you, and I go along with them." The rabbit shook his head so vigorously his flopping ears left spiral marks on the fur around his head.
"Not a chance! She loves me. She would never do something like that. What makes you suspect her?"
"For starters, your last words." I took out my notebook and read them to him. "No fair. You got me everything? Jessica, my contract." I turned the notebook and laid it on the corner of the desk so he could read his final statement himself. Twice he followed the words with his finger, and both times wound up in exactly the same place.
"Wait, I've got it," he said, holding a finger straight up as if to test the wind. "I wasn't talking to Jessica. No, I was talking about her, to someone else, to Rocco DeGrisi. I was talking about Jessica to Rocco DeGrisi, and he shot me."
"Try again," I said. "According to the cops, it's the other way around. You shot him."
"I shot who?"
"Rocco DeGrisi."
"Rocco?"
Granted, the guy acted for a living, but his googly wide eyes and puckered nose sure said dumbfounded to me.
"You mean the police think I shot Rocco?"
"Dead as a doornail. He got his about an hour before you got yours. The way the cops figure it, you went to DeGrisi's house and killed him. Jessica saw you do it, followed you home, and took a revenge."
"That's ridiculous. I could never kill anybody, not even Rocco DeGrisi."
"You threatened to once, remember? At a photo session? In front of 2 reliable witnesses?" Roger began to bounce around so actively I checked the rug for hopscotch boxes. But I saw only lifeless shag and yesterday's ashes.
Right, I did do that, but I didn't mean it. I could never kill another living being. It's not in my nature. I even sidestep ants on the street. I was being irrational that day. Look at it from my viewpoint. There I was, peacefully going about my job, when in walked Rocco DeGrisi. He started giving me guff about how he and I ought to get together and resolve this misunderstanding about my contract. That's a direct quote. Misunderstanding. I'll never forget how his fat face jiggled when he said it. I told him there was no misunderstanding. He had promised me my own strip, and that was it. End of negotiation. That's when he laughed at me, and I went after him. I guess I became a tad irrational, what with his laughter, and this being the first time I'd seen him since he'd coerced Jessica into leaving me.
Assuming that he did coerce her.
Of course he coerced her. I told you before she would never have left me of her own free will. She loved me. Jessica loved me, and I'm positive she still does. Anyway, yes, I attacked Rocco that day, and yes, I threatened to kill him, but I never intended to follow through.
What exactly do you remember about last night? Most of the rabbit's thought balloons came up either totally blank or slightly hazy.
Not much, I'm afraid. I spent pretty much of an ordinary evening. I had dinner, watched some television, and read a while. No visitors, no phone calls, nothing out of the ordinary.
He dribbled out a few more empty memories and finally gave up trying.
Where was Rocco killed?
At his home, in his study. You ever been there?
No, never. We conducted our dealings exclusively at his office. How was he killed?
He got shot with a .38 caliber revolver. The rabbit opened my cigar box and seemed rather disappointed to find it contained cigars.
Well, there you are. That should clear me. I've never fired a gun in my life, or owned one, either.
What about the one on your nightstand? Roger's words came out with at least a yard of spacing between them, and so tiny, I nearly got eye strain reading them.
What one in my nightstand?
A .38 caliber revolver with one bullet missing. The cops have it. They're running it through ballistics right now. But I'd be willing to bet it turns out to be the murder weapon.
You're kidding. In my nightstand? How could that be? I've never owned a gun in my life.
You have no idea how it got there.
None.
His eyelids rolled down.
Don't you see? This is a frame-up. Somebody is trying to saddle me with Rocco's murder. Somebody killed him and planted the gun at my place. I probably caught them at it, and they killed me to keep me quiet. Does that make sense?
It did, and I told him so.
That's it, then.
He used a big blue bandana to wipe the perspiration off his face, and a teasing comb to refluff his fur.
You find out who killed Rocco, and you also find out who killed me. You clear my name, and you also bring my killer to justice.
You might not like what I find.
How so?
For starters, when I got to your house this morning, I found a musical scale trailing out of the piano. The song was When You Wish Upon a Star. That have any significance to you? A light bulb flashed on over Roger's head. It was less than a 5-watt, but it would get a lot brighter and a lot hotter before I was done.
It was my favorite piece. I play it a lot. And sing along.
I remember you telling me you serenaded Jessica the evening you proposed. When You Wish Upon a Star, by any chance? The light bulb grew to 25 watts.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that was the song I played and sang for Jessica that evening. After that, we always considered it our song.
So if she had been there with you last night, it would have been natural for you to play it for her again? 75 watts.
I suppose so, yes.
Now tell me about your burglar alarm system. How does it work?
It's a marvelous device. It connects to every door and window in the house. It goes on automatically when the front door closes. You have to disengage it after you go in and before you go out, or the thing sets off a wail you wouldn't believe.
When I got to your place this morning, the door was ajar. The musical scale had gotten wrapped around the door handle. That's how I got in without setting off the alarm. The question is, how did the killer get out?
Beats me.
Jessica lived there in that house with you for nearly a year. Did she know the code to disengage that alarm? 100 watts.
Yes, she did.
So she could very easily have disengaged it after she shot you and walked out without setting it off?
Yes, I suppose she could have.
Did anyone else know the alarm code?
Sure, lots of people.
Name them. 200 watts and flashing caution.
Okay, so she was the only one.
Right. The only one besides you who could have gotten out without tripping the alarm. Now, let's investigate the other end. In order for the killer to get in, you had to disengage the alarm, correct?
Yes.
Would you have done that for Rocco De Grisi?
Of course not.
His brother Dominic?
No way!
How about Jessica?
Stop right here!
He said in a fragmented balloon you would expect to come out of somebody with his head buried to the shoulders in sand.
I know in my heart that Jessica did not kill me, just as I know in my heart that I did not kill Rocco De Grisi. So you can stop that line of questioning here and now.
Okay, let's try this one. I pulled the rubber Kermit the Frog toy out of my pocket. Ever see this before? Roger squeezed it several times, giggling when Kermit's tongue unfurled.
You see them around. It's a pretty popular toy. I can't say I recognize this one as being any different from 100 others I've seen.
Where did you get it? I found it outside your house. It hadn't been there long. My guess is that it was dropped by the killer.
Well, that would leave out Jessica. She would never carry around something as silly as this.
Or it might have been dropped by somebody who saw the killer.
Oh.
He didn't seem very happy to hear that there might have been an eyewitness to his untimely demise. I guess that's what love does to you. Makes you put on your blinders whenever your canter takes you anywhere near the truth.
Mr. Valian, how was I mean, what did he use to...
You were shot once in the chest. It looked to me like a clean hit. You didn't suffer much, if that's your concern. He nodded, and a matched set of crystalline teardrops rolled down either side of his face. You were apparently killed with some kind of antique musket or pistol, I said. You know of anybody who owns a piece like that? He shook his head, no. What about any other enemies you might have had? Anyone you haven't told me about? Anybody who might have wanted you out of the way? Again, he shook his head. He put his bandana to his nose and gave a honk loud enough to have every moose within 10 blocks pawing at my door.
Mr. Valiant, he said in those tiny, strung-out words again, I don't have long to exist. 48 hours at the most. After that, I'll disintegrate, and Roger Rabbit will be gone forever. There's one thing that I'd like to ask you to do for me, as a favor, before that happens. You see, Mr. Valiant, the real Roger, and now me, well, we've always wanted to be a private eye.
No way, I said firmly. I wasn't about to sign on as nursemaid to a cotton-tailed detective, dying wish or not.
Oh, please, Mr. Valiant, please. I'll do whatever you tell me to. It's not like I'm asking you to accommodate me permanently. 48 hours and I'll be gone. Out of your life forever.
2 days isn't very long to solve a double homicide. Even if I did let you tag along, you might not be around for the close. He gave me that irresistible please-take-me-home look you get from a $3 pup in a pet store window.
You can do it. I know you can. What say, Mr. Valiant? please?
I owed the rabbit true. If it would make him happy to step and fetch for me, who was I to deny him? All right. I take you on, but only under one condition. We level with each other. In everything. Agreed?
Sure.
He nodded his head so fast, the end of his ear cracked like a whip. Then let's start by you telling me why you pulled that pie assault on yourself. He switched back to the same forlorn puppy face that I guess he figured he got me with before.
On myself? No, Rocco did that.
I pointed toward the door. Take a hop. His puppy face grew up in a big hurry into a beaten cur. His word balloon came out so heavily weighted down with guilt, it dented the top of my desk.
I should have known I could never fool you.
Why did you even try? He stared at a spot about a million miles over my head.
I guess as a ploy to get sympathy? According to my psychiatrist, it goes back to when I was growing up. You see, I came from a very small town, and I
shook my head. Spare me the historical details. I'm only interested in here and now. Like the bit about Rocco offering you your own strip. You make that up too?
No, not that. That was the truth, I swear it.
And your story about you and Jessica? What about that?
True, every word of it.
He hung his head. If I hadn't jerked back in my chair, one of his ears would have speared me in the eye.
I'm sorry I tried to deceive you, he said. I won't ever do it again. You have my word on that.
He straightened up. This time, though, I was sitting well back when his ear came whistling past.
Please don't hold my one indiscretion against me. I promise you total honesty from here on out.
And you tone down the goofiness, too. You want to work with me? You act like a human.
You want humanity? Said Roger solemnly. You will get humanity you won't believe.
He held out his paw exactly the way a person would have. For the first, and I hoped last, time in my life, I shook hands with a rabbit. 15. I took the rabbit to my place. He didn't draw so much as a second glance from the people out front on the street. Shows you what the world's coming to. I can still remember the first toon who moved into this neighborhood. A good-looking guy, humanoid, a dead ringer for Smilin' Jack. Real personable, and as near normal as a toon could be. That was 20 years ago, and people marched through the streets in protest. They lost, he stayed. Now we've got more barnyards than old MacDonald's farm. Every morning my next-door neighbor sticks his head out the window and crows at the sun. You go into a diner for lunch and the guy on the stool next to you orders a bale of hay. Travel 10 feet down any sidewalk, and you'll step in at least one deflated moo balloon. And this is what the politicians downtown call social progress. I unlocked the door and we both went in. I don't believe in frou-frou. My living room comes furnished with a floor lamp, a reading chair, and a sofa. Add to that a wooden table where I play poker and work out chess problems, plus a few pictures, mostly of me in the Corps, and that's about it. I keep my chess books on the floor, my gun in a closet, my dinners in the freezer, and my booze under the sink. Simple and unpretentious. The kind of life guys go off to monasteries to enjoy, and I live it every day, right here in the City of the Angels. I sat Roger down on the sofa and went into my closet to dig him out of disguise. I knew that if Rusty Hudson or Clever Cleaver ever spotted him, they'd haul him in and grill him. That could easily eat up his 2 remaining days. Plus, I also had 2 killers to worry about, Rocco's and Roger's. If either of them spotted Roger, the rabbit wouldn't even last that long. So I had to keep anyone from recognizing Roger. A good trick when you're dealing with a 6-foot-tall, nationally famous rabbit. But never let it be said I didn't give it a try. In the back of my closet, I found a pair of baggy cords, a wool plaid shirt and a blue watch cap, with enough stretch in it to absorb those ears. I handed him the lot of it. From the flicker of disappointment in his eyes, I could tell that he didn't care much for my choice. But I knew that if left to his own devices, he would deck himself out in a zoot suit and consider himself inconspicuous because he didn't fluoresce when the lights went out. While I waited for him to change, I went over to my wooden table to work on the chess problem I had set out. But the rabbit had already solved it. I'd been struggling with it for nearly 2 days, and he solved it in less than 10 minutes. Made me wonder what other talents this bunny was hiding under his bushel. Roger came out of the bathroom wearing my clothes and did a 360-degree turn.
"Well, what do you think?"
"Your tail sticking out the top of your pants." He tucked it in.
"There. Better?"
I nodded. His ears refused to stay folded over inside the watch cap, so his head resembled an inverted woolen ice cream cone. But I could live with that. I gave him my old pea coat and told him to keep the collar pulled up around his face.
"Didn't you forget something?"
he asked me just before we left. "I don't think so," I said. "What?"
"How about a piece?"
He flipped his word balloon end over end the way a punk would do with a silver dollar.
"A piece of what?" A piece, you know, a gat, a rod, a gun."
He pointed his paw westward and squeezed off an imaginary round at the savages circling his wagon.
"I thought you said you'd never owned or shot a gun before." "True."
He fired again and grinned as another phantom engine bit the dust.
"Then what do you want with one now?" "It seems only appropriate. I mean, if I'm going to be a detective, I ought to pack a gun."
"I am a detective, and I don't." I opened my coat to prove it.
"Oh,"
he said. I don't know what he needed a gun for. His balloon came out so heavily laden with disappointment, he could have sapped Godzilla with it. We went downstairs, got into my car, and I drove us to Roger's house. I picked the lock, without leaving a single scratch on it, I might add, and we went inside. Roger immediately rushed to turn off the alarm, but he needn't have bothered. Cleaver's experts had deactivated it so the cops could come and go freely. "Remember," I reminded Roger, "we're looking for anything out of the ordinary, anything which I or the cops might have overlooked but which might be significant to you. Clear?"
"You bet," said the rabbit.
Where he got it, I'll never know. But he pulled a magnifying glass out of my pea coat pocket and walked into the living room with me close behind. You didn't need any magnifying glass to see what had happened here, though. I hardly recognized the place. Every sofa and chair cushion had been sliced open. The paintings had been pulled off the walls. Every drawer in every table had been dumped in the middle of the carpet. We went through the rest of the house and found it in the same state of disarray. We ended up in Roger's bedroom.
"The police aren't too neat when it comes to searching a place, are they?" Roger said.
He picked some underwear off the floor and put it into a drawer, but the bottom had been kicked out, and his skivvies fell straight through. "No cop did this," I said.
"Who then?" Roger asked. "And why?"
"We answer those questions, and we crack this case."
"Maybe, maybe not," countered Roger. "Maybe with the alarm off, some common crook broke in and robbed the place. I have had a few break-in attempts lately, forced windows mostly, but the alarm went off each time and frightened the burglar away. Maybe this time one of them made it."
"No." I poked through the scattered contents of Roger's jewelry box. He didn't have much, but what he did have would fence for 50 or 60 bucks minimum. No thief would leave that behind. "No, somebody was looking for something very specific. You have anything hidden in this house? Anything you haven't told me about?" The rabbit hopped to and fro, picking his stuff up off the floor. He got an armload before he figured out that, with the drawers all smashed, he had no place to put it. So he stacked it as neatly as he could along one wall.
"There was nothing here," said the rabbit. "Nothing hidden. Nothing anyone could possibly want."
"What about your contract with the DeGreeses? Where do you keep that?"
"At the bank, in my safety deposit box."
"How about your marriage license for you and Jessica?"
"Same place."
"Stocks? Bonds?"
"I don't have any."
Money? It's in a sock under my mattress. It would have simplified matters if it had been gone, but no such luck. The mattress and box springs were ripped to shreds, but the sock, money included, was still there.
What do you suppose they could possibly have wanted? Said Roger.
Tell you what, I said. Let's go through the house room by room. Try and reconstruct in your memory what each room contained. See if anything's missing. We started there in his bedroom and finished up in the kitchen. Anything? I asked.
Nothing of any importance, reported Roger.
Only my tea kettle.
Your what?
My tea kettle. I had been thinking more in terms of the sterling silver or maybe a painting. I might have known better where tunes were concerned.
Was it an antique? Did it have any value?
None that I know of.
Where did you get it?
Roger showed me what had to be a real oddity, a rabbit wearing a sheepish expression.
Off a movie set. It was the tea kettle used in the tea party scene from last year's remake of Alice in Wonderland. I had a bit part in the picture. On a whim, I sneaked the tea kettle off the set as a souvenir after the movie wrapped. But it was only an ordinary, cheap tea kettle, similar to any number of others from the Five and Dime.
Is that where it came from, this tea kettle? A Five and Dime?
No, not this one. From what I remember, the studio prop man bought it for 50 cents in a local junk shop.
What was it made of?
I don't know. Iron, I suppose. It had a gray lacquer coating and was very heavy. It must have weighed in at about 2 pounds. Boy, did it ever brew great tea. But that's about all it was good for. It certainly had no value.
Maybe none you know about. It could be very valuable indeed if that 2 pounds turned out to be solid gold.
2 pounds of solid gold, said the rabbit. For my life.
He hefted his 2 word balloons, one in each paw, but it wasn't even a close contest. The one with his life in it outweighed the other by more than half. He faced me head on, stood up ramrod straight, and said,
"Show me, would you please, the scene of the crime."
I pointed through the kitchen door to the staircase.
You were standing there. Whoever shot you was here, in the kitchen. You can see the hole in the wall where the bullet hit. You muttered your last words and fell forward across them onto the banister. That's where I found you.
I see, said Roger.
He climbed the stairway and stuck a finger into the bullet hole. Then he took a look at the banister. I noticed some dark brown stains at the banister's base. Dried blood. Roger's blood. I did my best to spare him the sight of it.
Hey! I said, distracting him. We're finished here. Let's get out.
Roger nodded, but kept staring at the banister.
Look, I said. If we want to get this case wrapped up, we've got to keep cracking. I've got some important stuff for you to do. Important detective stuff.
Roger's head snapped in my direction.
You do? What?
I want you to go to the public library and search through books on film history until you find a photo of the tea party scene from that Alice in Wonderland movie you were in. I want a photo that clearly shows the tea kettle. And something else, too. I opened my notebook and tore out a slip of paper. Here's the serial number of the 38 they found in your nightstand. Go down to City Hall and check the gun registration records. Determine who owns that gun. While you do that, I'm going to pay a call on Dominic DeGrisi. When you finish, go back to my place. We'll meet there and compare notes.
Right, Chief, said Roger.
He walked down the stairs and out the door. With what I thought showed real class, he never once looked back.
16.
A terrible, terrible thing what that rabbit did to my brother, said Dominic DeGrisi.
I could see why he had let his brother do the talking. Instead of a voice, he had a throat full of gravel that rattled every word and gave him the tin drum sound you hear in people who lubricate their tonsils with loud talk and cheap gin.
You going to run the syndicate alone? I asked.
You bet. Why not?
He pointed straight down at his desktop the way emperors point at their thrones.
Me and my brother built this syndicate together. I know as much about it as he did. Sure, the last few years he handled the business end of it, and I took care of keeping the talent in line. I just need a week or so to pick up the fine points, and I'll have the place ticking along better than ever.
I wished I could find a bookie willing to take a bet on that. DeGreasy sat down at his desk. He crossed his size 16 gunboats in a maneuver worthy of a naval captain.
I got a firm to run here, Valiant, he said.
He interlocked his hands behind his head. His black morning coat pulled open and gave me a clear view of the howitzer he packed under his armpit. It appeared to be about the same big-bore caliber as the gun that got Roger, but it was hardly an antique pirate pistol.
I got no time to waste on cheap gumshoes. If you came by to line up a pigeon to expense your tab while you rehash this case, forget it. That rabbit killed my brother, no doubt about it. Why should I pay you to nose around, come back and tell me what I already know?
That's not why I'm here, to get a client. I already have a client. DeGreasy snorted.
Who?
That's privileged information. Let's just say that my client believes Roger Rabbit might be getting framed for your brother's murder and wants me to check into it to see what I can find.
Sounds like a waste of money to me.
Possibly. The rabbit might be guilty as hell, but then again there's the outside chance he might be getting set up for somebody else, and if that's so, Rocco's murderer is right now running around scot-free. You wouldn't want that, would you? You wouldn't want your brother's killer to go loose. Dominic squirmed around in his chair, unable to find a position that fit.
No, you bet I wouldn't want that to happen. But why should it? The cops put their top man on the case, this Rusty Hudson. I got connections downtown, and I requested their best man special. The mayor himself gave me Hudson. He'll find out who really killed Rocco. Why should I think you'll do anything he won't?
Because he already considers the case closed. He's not going to follow up any loose ends. Why should he? The rabbit's a tailor-made fall guy. Hudson hangs it on the rabbit and wraps up the case in record time. But he might just be wrong. And that's what I intend to find out. It would be a lot easier if I had your help. But I'm going to keep plugging whether I get it or not. He shoved some junk from one side of his desk to the other, and probably considered that a good day's work.
If I go along with you, what do I have to do?
Hardly a thing. Answer a few questions about your brother. He looked across the desk at his brother's chair. For the first time in his life, there was nobody in it to tell him what to do.
I guess I can go that far, he said finally.
Swell. Oh, and also, I need to look through your brother's personal effects, see if there's anything in there that might throw some light on who, besides the rabbit, might have had a motive to kill him. He balked slightly at that.
The cops already went through Rocco's stuff.
Sure they did, but with the preconceived notion that the rabbit committed the crime. I come to the task with an open mind. He eyeballed the empty chair again, but it still wasn't talking.
Go ahead and search, he said at last.
Would you mind? I made shooing motions toward the door. I'd like to do it alone. It helps me concentrate.
Sure.
Dominic got to his feet, happy to have an excuse for motion.
Rocco kept his stuff in his drawers. Just stick your head out when you're done.
Before he left, Dominic made a big production out of locking the file cabinet and his desk. As soon as he shut the door, I picked the lock on his desk drawer. He must have had 50 pornographic magazines of the whips and chains variety stuffed in there. I searched around and found nothing else, and I mean nothing. His drawers contained no files, no calendar, no paper, not even a pencil. I put his magazines back and locked up. With a perverted dodo like Dominic at its helm, this company would be lucky to last 12 months. I used my picks again on the company files. Based on what I found in there, I revised my prognosis to 6 months. The company's financial statements showed that the DeGreasys had been steadily losing money for nearly a year. They had less operating capital than I did, and I had enough checks kited to lift me halfway up the hill to the poorhouse. I checked under R, and found one of those green cardboard dividers the cops put into place whenever they take something out. According to the divider's notation, they had removed the Roger Rabbit file. I fanned through the rest of the folders, but they'd taken nothing else. Obviously, as far as the cops were concerned, Roger was the killer. I closed up the files and was just about to start in on Rocco's desk when something clicked. Something odd. The file drawers appeared to be a few inches shorter than the file cabinet proper. I pulled the cabinet away from the wall and examined its backside. It took me a while, but I finally found it. A secret compartment. When you pressed a certain